One of the first people who taught me about alexithymia was the psychiatrist Henry Crystal, who worked with more than 1,000 Holocaust survivors in his effort to understand massive psychic trauma. Crystal, himself a concentration camp survivor, found that many of his patients were professionally successful, but their intimate relationships were bleak and distant. Suppressing their feelings had made it possible to attend to the business of the world, but at a price. They learned to shut down their once overwhelming emotions, and as a result, they no longer recognized what they were feeling. Few of them had any interest in therapy. Paul Fruin at the University of Western Ontario did a series of brain scans of people with PTSD who suffered from alexithymia. One of the participants told him, "I don't know what I feel. It's like my head and body aren't connected. I'm living in a tunnel, a fog. No matter what happens, it's the same reaction, numbness, nothing. Having a bubble bath and being burned or raped is the same feeling. My brain doesn't feel." Fruin and his colleague Ruth Lanius found that the more people were out of touch with their feelings, the less activity they had in the self-sensing areas of the brain. Because traumatized people often have trouble sensing what is going on in their bodies, they lack a nuanced response to frustration. They either react to stress by becoming spaced out or with excessive anger. Whatever their response, they often can't tell what is upsetting them. This failure to be in touch with their bodies contributes to their well-documented lack of self-protection and high rates of re-victimization, and also to their remarkable difficulties feeling pleasure, sensuality, and having a sense of meaning. People with alexithymia can get better only by learning to recognize the relationship between their physical sensations and their emotions. Much as colorblind people can only enter the world of color by learning to distinguish and appreciate shades of gray. Like my aunt and Henry Crystal's patients, they usually are reluctant to do that. Most seem to have made an unconscious decision that it is better to keep visiting doctors and treating ailments that don't heal than to do the painful work of facing the demons of the past. Depersonalization. One step further down on the ladder of self-oblivion is depersonalization, losing your sense of yourself. Uta's brain scan in Chapter 4 is, in its very blankness, a vivid illustration of depersonalization. Depersonalization is common during traumatic experiences. I was once mugged late at night in a park close to my home and, floating above the scene, saw myself lying in the snow with a small head wound, surrounded by 3 knife-wielding teenagers. I dissociated the pain of their stab wounds on my hands and did not feel the slightest fear as I calmly negotiated for the return of my emptied wallet.